Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Time to take a look at one of the biggest cases we've been following in terms of news headlines, and that speaks to the automotive industry. We've seen a number of articles where Ford employees have committed to take to the streets this coming Thursday, essentially raising concerns about what they believe is not receiving adequate share of the share profits in the business. We did reach out to Ford just to get some feedback on this particular statement, and specifically to NUMSA, just to follow through on why they are striking, when they look to take this legal action, and what their justification behind it is.
NUMSA press statement dated 2 July 2024. NUMSA members at Ford will be on strike over the boss's refusal to pay bonuses. NUMSA has served Ford South Africa with a 48-hour notice to strike. The NUMSA president, Andrew Chirwa, addressed more than 3,000 workers at the quarterly general meeting, and workers are very angry that Ford is trying to deny them bonuses. Ford failed to reach an agreement with NUMSA at the conciliation held on the 11th of June at the CCMA offices in Pretoria. After picketing rules were concluded, the commissioner issued the certificate to strike. The reason for the strike is that Ford is refusing to share its profits with workers. Our members are the creators of wealth, and Ford has benefited hugely from the sweat and labor of workers. It pretends not to understand the demand, and they keep claiming it is impermissible. We reject this with the contempt that it deserves. The strike begins on Thursday morning at 6 a.m. on the 4th of July. We call on all workers at Ford to unite behind NUMSA and to unite behind their demands. The statement was issued on behalf of NUMSA by Comrade Irvin Jim, the NUMSA General Secretary. For more information, please contact Phakamile Hlubuka-Jola, NUMSA National Spokesperson.
Well, there you have it. That's a voice note from Phakamile Hlubuka-Jola, who is the spokesperson for NUMSA at a national level, giving us some context and an understanding as to why the National Union of Metal Workers says it's going to embark on an indefinite strike against U.S. motor company Ford. As you've heard, looking for a 13th check, looking to also receive bonuses for the business, as well as increases, as they say they've adequately contributed to the profits of the business, which have been doing well. And we're going to contextualize this, Rao, by taking a look at the automotive industry. It's said to be one of the most significant contributors to our GDP, just shy or over 4% in terms of the GDP performance we saw in the last year. And of course, contributing to South Africa being the fifth largest export sector, essentially accounting for at least 18% of total exports. So one thing we know, it's a big industry, significant contributor to economic growth, and of course, as we see, employment. But given that this is a business, it is a private invested company, one that has its main listing and domiciled in the U.S., what are the rights, the legal obligations, and the opportunities that the employee can implement to enforce bonus payments and key payment increases from the employer? We're going to speak to a labor consultant now, Tony Healy, to give us some insight into this conversation. Mr. Healy, such a pleasure to speak to you, and welcome back to the show.
Gugu, great to be with you. Thank you.
Fantastic. I'm excited for this one. It's been a while since we've had you on, and I guess this one also gives us an opportunity just to evaluate themes from both sides, but fundamentally using the labor law and regulations as an anchor to the conversation. And I guess first things first, we aren't necessarily surprised by this kind of disgruntlement or disagreement between labor and business, as typically the bone of contention always relates to payment.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, if you look at, and we shouldn't be surprised, as you rightly said, you know, at the end of the day, conflict in the workplace is really inherent, because on the one hand, you've got the owners of capital who are looking to maximize profits. You've got employees looking to maximize conditions of service, and those conflicts clash, and there's interest clash, and you have these differences. And in this particular case, it happens to be over bonuses. And this is not something new, Gugu. It's something that employers and employees have clashed over over a long period of time. You know, at the end of the day, you're either gonna have a dispute regarding the size of the wage increase, the contribution to the Provident Fund, whether you are or aren't gonna pay bonuses, and other related conditions of service, such as medical aid and provident funds. Mm.
And as you mentioned, this is something that we typically do see. I'm keen to understand, though, the business, or rather Labour, has made it very clear that they've contributed to the growth of the business and they'd like a 13th check as well as a bonus. I'm conflicted as to how this typically needs to be negotiated, because typically there's wage deals that would be brokered. And at times also, I guess there'd be a measurement in terms of KPIs and the performance of the business before such financial commitments would be made. But where are we in terms of the legalities of the roles and responsibilities of both parties given these requests?
Well, Gugu, you raised two very important issues. You mentioned the word KPIs and you mentioned the term legality. So when it comes to KPIs, for the listeners, that stands for e-performance indicators, and that's typically a measurement of an individual employee's performance. But of course, when you're looking at collective bargaining, as we are here, you don't look at individual employee performance. You simply look at an across-the-board increase for all of your members, regardless of whether their performance is good or bad. And that's something that employers worry about in the collective bargaining process. And on the legality side, you know, you have this annual wage negotiation process or collective bargaining process where there's a list of proposals or demands, and the parties meet or don't meet each other on certain of those issues. And in this particular case, it happens to be over bonuses. So yes, you would expect employees and trade unionists to say, you know, it's our blood, sweat and tears that's made you so profitable. From the other perspective of the employer would say, well, yes, but, you know, there are many factors we need to take into consideration. There are stakeholders who put money into the business and they've taken risks, so they must be looked after. There's management that must be looked after. And we need to find, of course, a reasonable pay level for employees. So it's going to be interesting to see which of the two sides, namely the employer and the trade union, are going to buckle first in terms of this particular dispute.
Mm. I'm assuming so often business typically use the financial performance card, right, to say, hold on, we haven't made our targets, we haven't made a profit, we haven't reached our objectives. Does that hold any ground when it comes to such negotiations and remuneration of employees?
You know, Gugu, I think at the end of the day, if everybody's honest with each other, the truth lies probably somewhere in the middle. That on the one hand, what is being demanded, and quite understandably so, you know, a trade union exists to improve the conditions of service of their members. And history shows that in a unionized environment, trade unions invariably do give employees a quicker acceleration in their condition of service than would be the case if they weren't there. But on the other hand, you know, management also has legitimate constraints and considerations. Mm-hmm. And look, at the end of the day, we must remember, even if the strike kicks off on Thursday, we must remember no strikes last forever. Mm-hmm. And ultimately, one side acquiesces or the other acquiesces, or a compromise is reached for the strike to come to an end.
100%. I'm so glad you mentioned that, because it does take us back to the time when we saw that 5-month-long strike within the Platinum Belt just over a few years ago, and unfortunately led to the loss of lives in the mining space. But I guess, Tony, to help us comprehend this, as you say, you know, both sides actually have something to negotiate for, but also need to be open to understanding each other's needs. Can businesses be held accountable for an increase or 13th check if the labor brokers perhaps haven't had exposure to or disclosure of their financial performance? So much like a business would go into business rescue and key stakeholders can evaluate the financial performance of the company, does it work the same when it comes to earnings and salaries?
Look, at the end of the day, when it comes to information disclosure, Gugu, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, a majority trade union, and NUMSA is in this particular case, they would be entitled for information to be disclosed regarding the performance of the business if management is arguing that there's an affordability issue. But at the end of the day, what you're seeing is a really classic, and you see this all over the world, a classic power play, where on the one hand you have the trade union saying our members are going to withhold their labor until you give us what we want. And then management are going to say, you know, perhaps, well, You can do that for as long as you like. We're not going to fold, and you're going to have to, you're just going to lose income because strikers don't get paid when they strike. So all strikes come to an end. It's either because the one side concedes or the other side concedes, or they reach a compromise somewhere in the middle.
When and how and what makes a strike illegal?
That's a great question. So there's a couple of steps, and NUMSA, to their credit, have followed those steps. And it's really very simple. Mm-hmm. And maybe I just need to qualify that by saying, per se, we don't really have, in fact, we don't at all have such a thing as a legal or illegal strikes mm-hmm. anymore. We haven't had that since 1995. Then now, if I could be a little pedantic, are called protected or unprotected strikes, meaning that if a trade union follows certain steps, their members can embark upon a strike and they're protected from being dismissed. And those steps are very simple. Number one, go to the CCMA and say, look, we're lodging a dispute. Give the CCMA a chance to attempt to mediate resolution. If they fail, then you just give the employer 24 hours written notice of your intention to strike, and then you can embark upon what we call a protected strike, which is exactly what NUMSA is doing in the current situation, okay. And then their members are protected from being dismissed for striking. And that's, to some degree, if you like, very loosely akin to what we used to call a legal strike.
Got you. Would that only be applicable to organized labor?
Or their supporters. So typically what would happen, Gugu, is let's say 70% of the employees are union members. Invariably the 70% would go on strike, and the other 30, some will come to work, some won't. Some will feel uncomfortable coming to work, some won't. And typically management doesn't take action against such employees because the whole question of potential intimidation and the like comes into play. You can probably expect, you know, the automotive industry is highly unionized. There would be an almost complete absence at work because of the support of the strike. And as time goes by, those, you know, strikes tend to become, the support for the strike tends to dwindle over time because, of course, they're not paid, the strikers, and then they start to feel it at home, and then there's pressure at home to, you know, how are we going to feed the kids? How are we going to, finance, you know, keep the household going. So then, you know, over time, strikes tend to break down. But look, make no mistake, you can imagine in the automotive industry, if they're not producing, it puts immense pressure on management to possibly reconsider their position.
Oh, for sure. And speaking of management, Tony, this... Yeah, gets me excited, but also concerned, because Ford is an international company. They are part of members of the international community that invest in South Africa. And typically these kind of risk factors, what tends to see capital shy away from choosing to invest in South Africa because of, I guess, sporadic strike action that we see within the labor sector. In your experience, does this play any influence in the sustainability of attracting foreign direct investment in the country?
Yeah, great question. And of course it does to some degree, but we mustn't forget that, yes, to be honest, the strike activity in our country has been pretty low for a while. Mm. So it's been a while since the automotive industry has experienced a protracted strike. Relative to other manufacturing peers across the globe, South Africa is still a relatively cheap option for, as far as labor is concerned. You'll find that the Fords of the world and other multinationals do nonetheless pay substantially more than let's say the average pay would be for a similar worker in a different industry, and the conditions of employment are already, you know, objectively pretty good. And what you're seeing NUMSA doing, though, is their job, is to, no matter how good they are, is to keep extending those and growing those benefits for their members, because that's why they exist, to protect jobs, to promote job security, and to enhance the conditions of employment of their members, whether their pay is good, bad, or ugly.
100%. Such a pleasure speaking to you, Tony. We always listen, learn, and gain so much more of a better understanding into the labor dynamics in South Africa. Thank you kindly for your time this evening, sir.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Have a good evening further. That's Tony Healy, who's a labor consultant and, of course, lead of Tony Healy and Associates, giving us some context around the upcoming strike action that will be taken by NUMSA. As Tony's described to us, they follow through with the necessary protocols and the legalities to make sure that they do have what is described as a protected strike, as there isn't such a thing as a legal strike in South Africa. But, of course, both parties really working in their own interests, ongoing negotiations taking place. But ultimately, parties do have to acquiesce and meet each other halfway. Business can't stay out of production for too long. Labor can't stay not being productive for too long, because ultimately there is an economic cost to strike action. We'll see how this one does unfold and what insight we do see in terms of further details. And if Ford will go ahead and give us clarity around the 13th checks, bonuses and salary increases that NUM affiliated workers are fighting for at Ford.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.